We welcome all of you here today to our Inland Port meeting. I'm a fill in here for our chair. We've got people traveling around today. I think we'll have Jonathan on from the airport. Abby will be on here in just a few minutes, or if not quickly, and Tyler will be on. Tyler's on. Well, we do have a quorum then, so maybe we'll go ahead and just move forward with the agenda as is. So again, we welcome you here. The first order of business will be at the October 1st, 2025 Utah Inland Port Board meeting, and the minutes. And we would ask if you've checked those, if we could get a motion to approve or disapprove those minutes.
So moved.
Let's have a motion. Motion to approve the minutes. Do I have a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second to approve the minutes of October 6th. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Those minutes are approved. Tyler, are you with me?
Yep. Sorry, I was late, so I didn't want to sound like okay. I was opposing.
are you okay on the vote?
Yes, sir. Okay, yes, I'm an aye.
Thank you very much. That is a unanimous vote for those present. Let's move on then to the Executive Director report. Mr. Hart, our Executive Director, will present information to us today. Thank you, Ben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair, and to the board and to the public who are with us today, both in person and online, welcome to the meeting. It's great to have you with us and great to be back up in Salt Lake City again. This has been a really busy month for the port. I want to emphasize a few things just on the outset of the meeting. Given that we're going to talk a lot about our project areas and our amendments today, I'm going to upfront just remind people a little bit about our logistics side of our organization as well, and also some of the happenings that we've just recently had. To me, and I know I'm probably the only person not only in the room, maybe in the county, possibly in the country, that really loves and likes to talk about cargo. And the movement of freight. It really, really is critical. I teach a class up at the University of Utah, and we delve heavily into our transportation system. And I'm always amazed when I talk with students just how we don't understand how the stuff we use actually gets to us. And to me, the transportation network in this country is the great hidden system. It serves our lives every day. We're so dependent on it, and yet we're so unaware of it. We only see it when we get stopped at the tracks or when we have cargo ships outside ports on the coast. And so this network and this transportation system, I feel like if we don't regularly bring this back up and remind people just how important this transportation network is, the health and the efficiency of this network, but also the environmental stewardship it's required to be a part of this network, whether that's emissions and how we treat wetlands, to other issues related to sustainability and protecting our natural environment. There are so many different components and variables that go into having a good, efficient transportation network and ensuring that we have the best of the best here in the state of Utah. For the Utah Inland Port Authority, the economic side, along with the logistics stewardship that we have, are critical. For us, they're front and center. They're priority number one when it comes to what our mission, vision, values, and focus are. It's where we put our time. It's what we were designed to do. We've had some good wins in this area, and I just want to keep in front of people what we're doing to try and make this system a better system. I'm going to mention a few things that aren't on here. But first and foremost, we feel strongly, and we've not backed away from the position, that air cargo and enhancing air cargo here in the state of Utah is absolutely critical. We've been working to support the Salt Lake City International Airport. I'll talk about a win here in just one second. But we've been working with Salt Lake City Airport under their leadership to try and create more infrastructure and operators at Salt Lake City International. I've mentioned this stat before, but 92% of our freight that leaves the state on an airplane or leaves the state in air cargo leaves on a truck to go to other airports. We need the infrastructure here. It's an efficiency. It's a sustainability issue. Air cargo is absolutely critical. Also, throughout the state, we need enhanced rail access. We don't have, throughout the state of Utah, currently the ability to capture loading and cargo opportunities in all portions of the state. This is another area we've been working on, whether it's loans and AIB loans in Tooele, Iron County, and other places that are being considered. How do we create better rail access loading facilities here in the state of Utah? That also brings us to intermodal service as well. We've just recently seen the introduction of a second intermodal operator into the Utah market with BN. Those efficiencies, what that brings in competition to have secondary intermodal service, is critical not only for today and our shippers, our businesses, and us as consumers, but also long-term for the next generation. We can't keep putting everything on trucks. When we can take emissions out of the air, we can take trucks off the road through better use of our rail system, it is incumbent upon us to do that. So priority number two, we're going to keep pushing on that. The intermodal service bridges to our third priority, which is how do we establish better relationships with our ports? When we're talking about our intermodal service, that is absolutely critical to what we do, getting goods to the ports, coastal ports, more quickly. That is absolutely and will maintain a top priority, be a top priority for us. So we've had a number of really good wins this year in these categories, in all of these categories. I just want to reiterate these three priorities because they are what we're working on. They're going to be what we continue to work on as well. Earlier this week, and I just want to highlight this for the board and for the public, we were finally able to announce publicly the partnership with Delta Airlines on a new cargo facility. The port was ecstatic to be able to partner with Delta Airlines. This is infrastructure that will help improve efficiencies at the Salt Lake City International Airport, hopefully make them more competitive for other types of flights as we see some of their infrastructure improved, but then also improves what we're able to in terms of our cargo throughput here in the state of Utah. I know this got a little bit of news. It made a lot of trade waves across not only the United States, but also even the world as we were watching the coverage alert. We want to put the rest of the country and the rest of the world on notice that we are making significant changes here in the state of Utah to our transportation network. We're doing it the right way. We're doing it for the right reasons. We're making the state better, and we're going to protect our environment while we're doing that. We believe that we can accomplish all of those objectives at the same time. Let me also just give a public update regarding the work at the North Temple landfill. We do not have a discussion topic today for the board, so I'm just putting this slide up. I want to give huge kudos to Mark Nord. I saw Mark here earlier, and Gary McEntee for their amazing work that they're doing on the landfill. It's coming along, and one of the reasons I bring this up is because if you've driven by the landfill, you know how much waste has been removed and remediated and treated. And so they are making really good progress. I just want to point this out. The port has only owned this land since February. That's about 10, 11 months, depending on how you do the math. The fact that we were able to get control and start remediation, and now we're a third of the way through our phase one wrap, is a testament to the great private sector partners and also to the board and being willing to move quickly as we work to remediate what is a contaminant site out there in the Northwest Quadrant. So we will have more to come. I know people have said, look, we want to see, show us some, you know, flashy deliverables, show us what it's going to look like. It's going to look great. We're convinced of that, but we don't want to get ahead of ourselves and what this process needs to go through. So this is something we will continue to work on, but I just want to provide an update to the public. Things are going very well with the landfill. We're very happy with how our vendor and partner, Ninegrit, is working through the remediation. I had a chance to tour it yesterday or a couple of days ago. It is impressive. I was almost convinced we needed to do a board meeting out there. I don't know how that would have worked, but good things happening out there. I also will give one more update, and then I'll turn it over to Stephanie Pack for our Tooele Valley update. But just a quick update, we have adopted policy where we can make some non-substantive changes to our project area plan and budgets. When we do that, we like to just notify the public of what they were. And so a change we've made to the Mineral Mountains project area As you can see, this is, I'm just going to read this so the public is aware. In order to record the project area and amendments, Beaver County's recorder requested a more accurate legal description than the one included in the plan and budget for Amendment 2. The Beaver County GIS director provided an updated legal description, which has been updated in this document. It's replaced Appendix F, triggered by parcel resolutions with recording and trigger resolution log. If you'd like more information, the Mineral Mountains updated project area plan is on our website, and you're welcome to go learn more about that change. But again, we just want to keep the public in the loop when we make minor changes like that. Thank you to Amy and her good work, and also Danny Stewart. So with that, I am going to turn the time over, and you might have slides to show, Stephanie. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Excuse me. Ben will take the minute here. As I said, I don't conduct this meeting all the time, but I got a little bit ahead of myself. So for those of you here, if there are those of you here that wish to comment, make public comment, that will happen about approximately 3 p.m. And we've made the announcement on where the board members are and how we're all participating today. And if you wish to speak during the public comment, please fill out a comment card and hand it to Diana Gardner. Diana, would you raise your hand?
Carol.
Oh, Carol. Okay. I only read what's in front of me, so thank you. Anyway, give it to Carol, and she'll make sure that we get you when it comes time to comment. We'll have some time for you. And with that, we will now move to Amy Brown Coffin, who will, is that right?
We were going to have Stephanie.
Oh, excuse me. Go ahead.
Thank you so much.
Stephanie, I'm sorry. I get ahead of myself, and then when I have to back up, I overback, so we're okay.
That's just fine. I am just doing an informational presentation, an update on the Tooele Valley project area. We recently brought some amendments to the board on the Tooele Valley project area, but we're really quickly coming on the anniversary of the creation of the project area and wanted to provide some updates. This is the current boundary of the project area. We've had some exciting updates to the project area in recent months that I'm going to go through really quickly. We are excited about the first amendment to this project area, which adds about 342 additional acres to the project area boundaries. We're also really excited about the ribbon cutting ceremony that occurred on September 17th for the Savage Tooele Railroad. That railroad will provide rail service to this project area. And we couldn't be more thrilled with how that project is getting developed. They actually conducted that ribbon cutting ceremony on site at the Tooele Valley project area, and we're really thrilled about the progress they've made on that so far. We're also really excited to announce that the TVPID issued their first bond. That's going to be crucial to the funding of infrastructure for this project area, infrastructure that's already underway thanks to the financing tools that the board has provided this project area, including an AIB loan that this bond will help cover. So we have a significant amount of active projects looking at this area from a variety of different industries, largely in manufacturing, light industrial, but we also have some exciting energy projects that we're considering as well. We have a number of projects in active negotiation today, and we hope that we'll see some announcements of those projects before the end of the year, which we're really excited about. We're moving forward with some infrastructure upgrades in the area. There is already significant rail and road infrastructure in place today. They also have been working on power upgrades, natural gas extensions, water tanks, pump stations, you name it. There is dirt being moved and infrastructure being put in the ground today. We're also really excited about the completion of a wetland crossing that actually helps keep those wetlands intact. rather than bisecting existing wetlands. These are the type of sustainable developments that we take pride in as an inland port, because it shows that these developments are being mindful and good stewards of the existing assets in this area. So we're grateful for the developer, the Zenith Group, and their care in addressing that sensitive area and ensuring that those are minimally impacted, and, you know, also apply to the current regulations set forth by the state and by the federal government. Here's a list of some of the infrastructure pieces that I mentioned. Again, you know, there's been so much activity here, and we couldn't be more thrilled with the progress we've made so far. And here's a picture of the rail line that has been completed up to this part of the project area. It will continue to be extended into Grantsville City and into our 20 Wells project area. And we're also excited to announce that Union Pacific has listed the Tooele Valley project area as a focus site. And we believe that this will really put the Tooele Valley project area on the map, particularly for Union Pacific customers to take advantage of this rail-served industrial park facilitated by the Utah Inland Port Authority. So that's my update. Any questions from the board?
I see no questions. Thank you.
Thank you
very much. I guess if I turn your mic on, you're going to, right? Is that right? Okay.
Great. Thank you so much. I'm here to speak at this board meeting on some of our policy updates. This board meeting, we have a list of five that we're just bringing up for its annual review or with some adjustments to them. We will only be seeking approval on one of them, as we'll bring the others next board meeting for their final approval at that time. We are looking on, I'm going to highlight some of these, especially where we have some changes to them. The project area and property tax differential, we did a very minor revision to this, and I kind of as elucidated by our executive director, looking at adding just a section for minimal boundary additions to the amendment section for project area plans and budgets, where we would have a single board meeting approval for that. So that is what has changed on this specific policy. We have BP06, which is the board policy review. This is the one that talks about exactly what we're speaking to now and how we bring forth these policies, how we bring them through a two-meeting cycle. Based upon just this review, we have no recommended changes to this policy at this time. We also have BP07, which is our procurement policy. And based on just an internal review, as we've looked at it, we've found some meaning in adding a procurement exception section, as well as just correcting some of the formatting as it represents chapter to code to make sure it's updated. So as we've had our CFO and Deputy Director Arianne Gibson look over and bringing in some of her best practices, that's what's within this draft policy at this time. BP08, which is our whistleblower policy, that is something that we have reviewed. At this time, we don't have any changes to this. And then we've got BP09, which is our internal control program policy. Again, as we've reviewed this, we don't have any changes recommended at this time, but we will be, bringing up next board meeting. With our policy, are able to make changes in between now and then. I will pause here for any questions from the board that I could answer related to these exciting, exhilarating update on policies.
Any questions? I see no questions, so thank you very much.
Thank you.
We will consider those as they come up on the agenda, I guess, in our next meeting. Is that correct? Thank you. Okay, let's we have Jonathan Friedman is going to present the audit to us, but he's at the airport, and he's scheduled to come in at about 10 minutes. So We're going to go ahead and skip over item 5, and we'll go to item 6 on the agenda. I have a presentation draft draft presentation on the Northwest Quadrant Baseline Study. Stephen Smith will present that to us. Let's see. I think those mics are on.
Let's give that a test. There we go.
There you go. Thank you.
Fantastic. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let me just get this. Okay. Well, thank you again, Mr. Chair and members of the board. We appreciate the time today. We're very excited to provide you with an update on the, an update and a high-level summary on the Northwest Quadrant Baseline Study. Joining me today in person is Nicole McDermott with WSP, who helped lead out the study for us. And online, we have Debbie Lyons with Salt Lake City Sustainability, I believe. And including myself, we are really the project leads for our respective organizations on this study. We're going to walk you through some high-level findings. Again, this is not the final report. We'll talk about that. These are really just kind of summarized slides for that. We'll take you through that. But as you may recall, our cooperative interlocal agreement with Salt Lake City has outlined expectations for us to complete 2 studies to support and identify opportunities for the use of annual city-generated tax differential in the Northwest Quadrant. The baseline study was conducted to first identify existing conditions in the Northwest Quadrant based on current developmental trends. Let me change my slide here. And this focused specifically on these items that are listed here on this slide. Just a couple reminders, and we'll probably say this a few times. This study was not meant to conduct original research, but rather to utilize existing data and studies that have been done in the area to identify those conditions. The purpose of the baseline study was not to identify specific solutions, but rather highlight what are general opportunities. The preferred scenario study, which we're working on now, will identify and recommend specific strategic actions to drive preferred outcomes. With that introduction, I'd like to turn a little bit of time over to Nicole to discuss a little bit more about the methodology for this.
Thanks, Stephen. Thanks for having me here today. So as Stephen said, I want to talk a little bit about methodology. And as he already mentioned, this was not a study that conducted original research. We didn't produce new data for this, but we did do a comprehensive look at the data that exists for the area and compiled that to understand baseline conditions. So we looked at air and environmental data from the Department of Environmental Quality, U.S. Fish and Wildlife. We looked at census data to understand demographics and jobs information. We also used transportation and traffic data from UDOT, UTA, Salt Lake City, and the Wasatch Front Regional Council. With this, in some cases, specifically kind of related to health data, we found that there wasn't a lot of local data that existed. So we had to rely on regional or state level data and draw conclusions from that. But that plays into the recommendations that you'll hear about kind of at the end of our presentation, where there's an opportunity to gather more local information, perhaps from a partner agency follow-up study or something like that. So next slide. So while Stephen's pulling up the next slides, I'll just say the next series of slides go through our high-level findings, I think the next one's about community survey. So let you go through the engagement first.
Yeah. It took just a minute to so didn't want to catch up. Is there a question online? So just to walk through the community engagement portion of this, I'm going to say we spent a significant amount of time and effort in engaging it with community feedback for the baseline study. That included attending multiple events in the Northwest Quadrant over the last several months, multiple working sessions, what we've talked about here. Yesterday, we hosted one of 2 open house sessions. Yesterday's was in the Fair Park neighborhood. to discuss the results with community members. We feel like that went very well. We've got one more scheduled this Saturday at Day Riverside Branch Library in Rose Park. So if you want to come out and see us there and learn all about this a little bit more in detail, we'd love to have you out. I do want to shout out a few people here, especially our Salt Lake partners, Debbie and her team, really instrumental in helping us identify a lot of the engagement opportunities that they were aware of. And then as well, all the staff members, Salt Lake, WSP, our team, for being out and about and being willing to participate in these events through the course of the summer. So that coupled with that feedback, coupled with the survey results Nicole's going to go through in a minute, were really very instrumental and allowed us to gather a significant amount of community feedback to inform this study.
Thank you. So the community feedback, you know, really helped supplement the data that we were looking at too, so that we weren't just looking at the data, but we were also understanding the conditions on the ground from the people who live in the area, the community themselves. So, we prepared this survey, as Stephen said, it was a really collaborative effort between UIPA, Salt Lake City, and our consultant team to develop a series of questions to engage the public around what the conditions for are in the area related to these different topic areas, environment, transportation, economic development, to really understand what the community interests are. So we also asked demographic questions in order to understand who we were talking to, you know, what neighborhoods they lived in. We received 173 survey responses, and the comments and concerns really echoed in the survey what we heard from the other engagement activities that Stephen talked about, too, the tabling events, some technical workshops that we had. And we understood, you know, there's a lot of support for preservation of natural areas and wetlands. There's a desire for more amenities and transit connections. There's opportunities there. And there's a lot of concern related to air quality and water quality, and just some concerns related to sort of transparency and how UIPA conducts business and decision-making, and wanting to understand more of those things at a community level as well. So the next series of slides are the high level overview of the different categories, the different topic areas that we looked at. So there's a lot of text on these slides. I won't read all of it. I really just want to provide you with a few key takeaways related to each topic area. So for economic development, we looked at the distribution of land uses and availability of vacant land, which is roughly 2/3 of the Northwest Quadrant. So a significant amount of land in the area is currently vacant. We also conducted a jobs profile that indicates about 2/3 of the jobs in the Northwest Quadrant pay more than $40,000 per year, and over half the jobs do not require a college degree. So these two things together really create an opportunity for low barrier to entry kind of jobs and employment opportunities, as well as workforce training, on the job training, those types of things.
I'll just add here too, those two last two metrics stood out to me. Those are really good opportunities for us to measure success here as we go forward and we look at, you know, what is that median wage? What require a full college degree versus which can be skill-based training? So as we get into the preferred scenarios and recommendations, we're also looking at how do we measure success around these things? And I think these are a couple of ways we potentially would do that.
So next, related to economic development, we also looked at economic development through the lens of the West Side neighborhood and what the demographics are for the West Side neighborhood. So research indicated that there's lower employment levels and incomes on the West Side, and this also speaks to that opportunity for workforce development and training. And the current industrial market in the Northwest Quadrant is largely dominated by warehousing and distribution. But again, there's an opportunity there for more advanced manufacturing and that biotechnology type firms. For transportation, a primary takeaway for transportation is really related to this freight and train movement. So that is expected to rise approximately 35% over the next 20 years. And so with delays in associated with train crossings already being a concern for people, there is a real opportunity here for additional mitigation and improvements to upgrade or separate train crossings, and just in think more about how the connection between the vehicular traffic and that freight movement occurs and what opportunities exist there for future improvements. I'll also noted from previous engagement results, you know, that opportunity for active transportation and transit. So again, the data bared that out as well, that there is a need for additional active transportation and transit in the area. For community and health, again, here, our findings were pretty consistent with what we heard from the community as well. There's a lack of community facilities in the Northwest quadrant to support residents and employees in the area. Again, this creates another opportunity to support additional community amenities, partnership efforts. And I mentioned that data source, kind of lack of local data source previously as well. So that was something that really came up related to health data. And as we were looking at health in this area, there was not local data that exists. And so having to look at state or regional level doesn't provide kind of the nuance that's necessary. And so there's an opportunity, you know, for perhaps a partner agency to lead additional area specific studies to obtain more localized health data. And then on the environment, we looked at sensitive lands, water conservation measures, and water and air quality. Those were the primary factors of the environment that we looked at. There's significant wildlife and sensitive areas in the Northwest Quadrant and in the surrounding areas. And this, again, creates a lot of opportunity for wetland preservation, for partnership opportunities with Salt Lake City or others to support additional water conservation measures, improve stormwater facilities, and as well as opportunities related to air quality and how technology advancements can improve air quality. So with that, I'll turn it back to Stephen to kind of focus on the recommendations for how we deal with all of those opportunities.
So that this is where, you know, obviously the rubber hits the road, right? And figuring that out is a big area of focus for the preferred scenarios. Where we've taken this, we started to identify general opportunities in the Northwest Quadrant. The next step is really refining those into very specific recommendations. One of the outcomes of this study is not to just have generalizations like, hey, we should spend more time doing this. Now, what does that specifically mean? How could that be supported through, you know, funding? Or is that even potentially a policy change that we need to recommend elsewhere? And that is something else that we're looking at. Here we have a couple of examples of ways that we're potentially looking at doing that. But again, it'll take refinement. We know we need transit access. If we want West Side communities to be able to have access to these jobs and these economic opportunities we're building out there, we need a way for them to get there. We know that. How do we go about doing that? So lastly, I'll just touch on this. This is just the timeline, and I want to be sensitive to our time on this, but we are looking at finalizing that baseline study recommendations and the final report in the December timeframe. In the meantime, we are working through the preferred scenario study. We have a couple of actions there, and then we do expect to come back to the board in March to present the final presentations for that. With that, any questions?
Do we have any questions? I'm Victoria. Oh, I guess you need your mic turned on.
I mean, I can project.
That makes for short questions.
I can project. I'm trained in opera. I can do that if you prefer. Okay, first of all, thank you for being everywhere. Like, I had a campaign season, and you were in more places than I was as a candidate. So thank you. Like, it's really notable how much, since I've been on the board, the port has assumed the responsibility of showing up and being present and being visible. And not just being there always telling my neighbors that we're going to do something, but just showing up to celebrate with the neighbors and be a part. So thank you. Let's start with that. Now I have to be who I am and ask the hard questions. Okay. Under the economic, I am being approached repeatedly by businesses that are entering into the area for safety help. We know that out in that area, we always have rampant street racing. This requires multi-jurisdictional stings to handle. It requires street calming investments and things like that. We also know that we have typical things like construction sites having things stolen from them, which are common. The money that would be used to hire the additional police people to respond to this is not coming to the city anymore. So under the economic considerations, we have to really evaluate what we're doing to my neighbors, because I have a disproportionate number of not only workforce people who are struggling to hold on to real estate investments and maintain, you know, a status that can keep up with rents, but I also have a ton of multi-generational people living on fixed incomes who are retired blue-collar workers who, when we continue to increase their property tax $4 or $5 a year, while their eggs are twice as expensive, while their coffee is twice as expensive, we are displacing people. And we're displacing them through taxation. And even if that taxation is for good things, like increased police and public safety, economically, we are forcing the workforce that we are trying to help out of their homes. So we need to have really, 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 really hard discussions about what we do, especially knowing that this legislative session, they're going to be coming for municipalities and our ability to manage our own property tax levels. So we are headed for a catastrophe unless we have, and I trust that the leadership here has always in good faith dealt with the leadership of my city, but this needs to be on the public record, and it needs to be, especially under those economic considerations, a much higher priority. Any investment that we're asking the city to do in this area above what we used to do is increasing over that 25% that we get and going into that growth. So how are we going to mitigate those impacts on my neighbors? Secondarily, can I just say, I'm going to go back to something positive. Thanks for not thinking that bike lanes are woke. You know, the city, we get in trouble if we put a bike lane in. Thank you. Are you guys subject to SB 195 too? This is really exciting to me. Just love the validation from a subdivision of the state that bike lanes and e-scooters and all those things actually do have a place and are important. So thank you all. And then the third thing is, how was the attendance last night? How are you? I know that there's a lot of confusion among my neighbors, like, especially right now, we're disproportionately being hit by the SNAP. We have affordable childcare that was just cut by another level of government for my neighbors. We have a disproportionate number of people who keep the economy running because the government, we have collectively invested in them so they can. I don't believe in subsidies. I believe in investment in utilities, and my neighbors are that. So can you tell me, how is the attendance? I know I have a disproportionately distracted neighborhood right now, and are they understanding what you're asking them, or is there more education needed on this?
Well, last night, I would say we were pleasantly surprised in the outcome. And, you know, coincidentally, for whatever it's worth, we were at the Northwest Community Center, right? That was kind of the setting. We didn't expect big numbers last night. I would say we got somewhere in the neighborhood of 15 to 20, and we got maybe about, 10 to kind of go through the whole process with us. But there was a lot of educating about what this was and what we were looking for. And the point really was to say, what are the hotspots for you? And we got a lot of really good feedback from that, including some of the things that you brought up. So Saturdays, we're expecting that to be a bigger turnout. We're hoping for that because it's at a library. It's on a weekend. So hopefully more people can get out there.
But if I can be a resource to you, I would really like to, both in the ongoing education and in the recruitment. But thank you for considering my neighbors in ways that they haven't been considered.
Yeah, absolutely. I will say it's been extremely fulfilling for all of us that had a chance to do that. This is probably more than we've ever done. And it was wonderful.
So, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. We have no other comments or questions. Steve, what I'd like to do is ask if you'll just stay there. I think you're next on the agenda. I'd like to back up and take care of the audit if we could.
Absolutely.
Okay. We'll thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. So we'll now go to Jonathan Friedman, who has a presentation for us on our audit findings.
Thank you, everyone. I'm sorry. It's a little loud where I am. I'm in an airport, but as chair of the audit committee, I'm really pleased to report that we just completed the fiscal year 2025 financial audit. It was conducted by the Office of the Utah State Auditor. And the biggest news is that once again, the Inland Port received an unmodified opinion. So it's the best possible result and confirms, you know, the financial statements are presented fairly and accurately. It's really exceptional because this is the first time since fiscal year 2021 that we've achieved this unmodified opinion with zero finding, meaning no material weaknesses in our internal controls, no instances of noncompliance. So I really want to congratulate the team at the Inland Board for in compliance and finance, all those that helped with this audit and are conducting, you know, their work in such a wonderful way, and certainly to Director Hart. What else can I tell you? Let's see. This was also filed very early. It was filed on, or the report was issued on October 14th. It's the earliest in the authority's recent history. Just to kind of compare that, last year's audit report was not issued until the end of December. So again, great job to the team at the Inland Port. The audit committee, you know, wants to express its praise for the significant undertaking by the finance team to clean up, you know, issues and to, you know, achieve this outstanding result. Thank you just so much. I think with that, I think I'll, yeah, that's the report. Thank you very much.
Jonathan, that's quite amazing. I don't know how many audits I've sat through in the last, seems like 100 years, but, I can tell you that it's not very often you get one with no appreciable findings. So amazing. I think that says a lot for our team here. Thank you so much. Yeah, it's, we've, that really is quite incredible. Very seldom do you hear that. So thank you. Thank you. Nothing will turn the lights on quicker than a bad audit or off. All right. If any questions, any comments from the board on that or anything? Okay. Thank you. Let's move on then. Let's go back to Steve.
All right. Thank you. Can't shake me quite that quickly. All right. So we've got a quick presentation here. Bringing to the board today, and we're excited to bring to the board today, a project area incentive proposal for Progress Energy Storage, which is a subsidiary of Accelergen. This is notable because this is the first incentive proposal that we're bringing outside of the Salt Lake City area of the Northwest Quadrant. This would actually be located in Magna City. And so it's notable for that. This is a battery energy storage project in Magna, as I said, we're looking at about a capital investment of around $245 million. Now, this board may recall we've done a battery energy storage incentive in the past in the Northwest Quadrant in Salt Lake. And you may wonder, why are we doing another one of these? Well, very much, you know, beneficial to our project area from an energy sustainability standpoint. We're going to get into that a little bit more and kind of talk about that. But these are really great projects for us to have to as foundation for the types of industries that we're trying to bring into the area. So with that, I want to introduce our visitor today, Tom DuBell with Cirrus, right?
Yep.
Who's going to kind of talk just a little bit about Accelergen and the project.
Sure. Thank you very much for having me here. We're excited about this project. Like Stephen said, it's a 200-megawatt standalone battery storage project. And what battery storage projects do are they're energy agnostic. So they really, you know, they don't care what energy is on the grid, what the source of it is. What they do is they shore up and expand the grid. The goal of an energy storage project is to accumulate energy when it's not being used and then have it stored so that it's on demand and able to be delivered in a New York minute, so to speak, you know, when it's needed. So what makes them difficult from, you know, deciding if it's a go or no go, they're actually kind of the reverse of a lot of economic development projects in the fact that they find the land that they want first, and then they have to figure out, well, in year one, I need to make a significant, in this case, about a $245 million investment decision. But I have to make that investment decision because I have commitments that I'm making that go out 20 to 25 years. And it is pretty much the exact opposite of any economic development project that I've ever represented in my entire career, because usually we're looking at a 1 to 3 year. So every bit of the financial model becomes quite important to us, and the ability to predict what it is. So with working with you guys here today, it goes a long way to helping us get to that final investment decision.
So just want to touch on very quickly the, you know, what are the but fors here? It directly aligns to our project area plan first, but it's very beneficial to our growth in this area. Most importantly, I think we all know that energy and energy dependability is just such a critical issue right now. And so this really directly aligns with a lot of the objectives in Operation Gigawatt. Again, for this incentive, they are looking at other potential markets here. We want to help make sure that we're able to secure this very valuable resource in our project area. So just to note, we are recommending a 20% property tax rebate. Again, as those are always, they're for no more than 25 years. They're subject to early termination. This was reviewed and approved by our tax differential committee back in August, or recommended, I should say. And so we are looking for the board's ultimate final approval when you get to that point in the agenda. Any questions?
I have no questions. Do appreciate you coming in and making that presentation. I've been involved. There's a lot going on as far as the state of Utah and energy right now, and I'm sure you're very well aware of that. And this is a little bit like that shortstop on that baseball team that we watched play last week that I think, you know, that's really important that they're there, and we need this. We need to use all the energy we produce, and this certainly helps us in that process. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Let's move on to Jenna Draper. I think you have a presentation involving the amendment of the Skyline Corridor project area.
Thank you guys for the time today. I'll be presenting the second amendment to the Skyline Corridor project area. The first amendment added some land in some additional communities that wanted to be part of the project area. This one is expanding communities that we are already have a presence in, just adding in some additional acreage in those. Ephraim Crossing, which I know we've talked a lot about, they came and did a PID presentation, and we've done a few things with them. When we first set up the project area, we inadvertently neglected four of their parcels. So we're just adding those in so that they can get their bonds set up the way they need to be. And there's two other communities that have businesses there that are existing and are looking to expand. So we needed to add those parcels into these project areas as well. Recruitment industries are going to still be focused on light to medium manufacturing and also warehousing and distribution. Ephraim City, you can see just the parcels up at the top and the parcels to the right that are going to be contiguous with the current Ephraim Crossing parcels. Gunnison City, I've actually got Dennis Marker here with me. He's the city administrator or manager? Administrator for Gunnison City. He's going to tell us a little bit about what their plans are and why they would like to add these parcels into their project area.
Thank you, Jenna, and thank you, Mr. Chair and board members. Gunnison's been working very closely with the Trustlands Administration to bring them into our park, our innovation park. And we have, in fact, a project that we're working on right now to expand the infrastructure in the park. It's a $650,000 project. Trustlands Administration has committed $100,000 to that effort, and the city is also putting $100,000 into that. Even San Pete County is contributing a token amount of their economic funds to make this infrastructure happen. And we've applied to the Governor's Office of Economic Opportunity for a Rural Community Opportunity Grant to try to round out the funding for this project. The hope is that as this infrastructure goes in, that over 200 acres or phase two of this park will be able to open up And with that, the potential of another 200 plus jobs and over $11 million of tax differential. And that's very conservative numbers that Zions Bank Public Finance has looked at for this project. So we would appreciate the board's consideration of expanding that for Gunnison and the rest of the Skyline Corridor.
We did trigger some parcels in Gunnison City this year, and we intend to use the differential from those parcels to go towards this, if that's still what Gunnison City would like to do as part of Gunnison City's obligation for that loan to go, or excuse me, that grant application to GOEO. Wayne County has also elected to put in a different area. Their current acreage is down by the airport, and after going down some feasibility studies and some other expected costs, it's going to be about $10 million to run the water line from Lyman Town out to that industrial park. So they have actually decided to start with a smaller area that's over near Bicknell. They have a community center there, and then it would be closer to Bicknell Town to run that infrastructure. So they're asking us to add in this about 45 acres so that they can start with a smaller industrial park, get some differential going, still be able to help those businesses while they figure out how to pay that $10 million for the additional water infrastructure. This amendment was presented to the Tax Differential Committee on October 29th, 2025, and received a unanimous favorable recommendation. This first presentation is informational only, so we don't anticipate any board action right now, but just if there are any questions, we'd love to answer them.
Must have presented very well. I see no questions.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate your time on this. This is, these things are going to be amazing for rural Utah as they develop. And I think a lot of people are watching this closely and actually envious over what's going on. So, Danny, I believe you're next on the agenda. If you can introduce your guests.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Happy to be here with you to present today the proposed amendments for two of our project areas, beginning with the Iron Springs project area. Let me get this shared for you to view. Okay. All right, I have two guests joining me today. To my far right here, this is Brent Drew. He is with the Port 15 Industrial Park in Cedar City. And immediately to my right is Sean Kerr, who is director of the AgriPark for R6 Regional Council, that are both included in these project area amendments today, in case you have any questions of these gentlemen. As you know, we're gonna start today with the project area in Cedar City, the Iron Springs project area. Let me expand the size of this a little bit. As you know, the boundaries currently of the Iron Springs project area are located in unincorporated Iron County. This amendment is going to bring industrial zone properties in Cedar City and Parowan into the Iron Springs project area. And Port 15 Industrial Park is just right on the other side of the tracks. That's where Cedar City, Iron County boundaries meet. So for the first time, we're working with the municipalities in Iron County with some industrial properties. Port 15 Industrial Park has about 440 acres of land that is undeveloped at this point. That is what we are looking at bringing in. And a couple miles just east of there on Highway 56, we have 152 additional acres that is called the Amber Industrial Park. We'll talk a little bit more about them. The other area for inclusion is the Parowan Industrial Park. This is 460 acres located just to the north end of Parowan on the I-15 north interchange, zoned industrial and specific to airport type development. The amendment is key to Cedar City, Parowan, and Iron County achieving their joint economic development goals consistent with the original Iron Springs project area plan. This promotes new employment by encouraging existing businesses to expand and by recruiting new companies to the area. The Port 15 Industrial Park has been Cedar City's focal point for industrial development since it was created by the city's redevelopment agency in 2007. As the city has experienced very rapid growth in the past decade, much of the utility capacity planned for Port 15 is now being consumed by new residential developments near the park. Port 15 and Cedar City see the inclusion of the Iron Springs project area as the best option for investing in new infrastructure and continuing to recruit new companies based on the momentum built over multiple wins that have occurred there in Port 15 over the past several years. Another thing that's really helpful, and Brent could speak to this, when you call a development Port 15, it's been there for a while, and then we have an inland port project area, we're going to eliminate some confusion in names by including Port 15 in the inland port project area. The other area that we're looking at in Cedar City, this is the 152-acre Amber Industrial Park. This is being developed for light industrial development. It does have rail access to help with the community strategy for business expansion and recruitment. When we move up I-15 to Parowan, they're also experiencing growth, quite a bit of growth over the past several years, and they are targeting industrial property near their airport to attract private investment interests there. Parowan sees the project area amendment as the best path to secure the public infrastructure needed in that industrial park as they strive to expand their economic base and diversify their economy in our county seat. Ultimately, the inclusion of these properties in the Iron Springs project area will help both of Cedar City and Parowan, as well as the county, successfully implement their economic development plans. We'll be seeking your approval later in the meeting today on this item. Are there any board questions about the Iron Springs proposed amendment?
I have one very, very quick question. All of these projects that we look at, we look at, it doesn't matter if we go to Parowan or Cedar City, I've been on those projects. And are we skipping areas of incorporation in a community, or are these areas included in the boundary declaration of the cities that we're working with?
Yeah, the original area that we started was unincorporated Iron County, where we first created the Iron Springs project area. And a big reason that we didn't initially include the Port 15 project area wasn't to exclude the city. It's that they already had a redevelopment project area. They had a program in place through the RDA to help fund that. As we've met with Cedar City and with Port 15, it makes sense now to keep that RDA in place for those properties which have been developed and where new buildings and new development is in place. But for the undeveloped areas, it's a good solution for Cedar City and for Port 15 together to work on building out some infrastructure needs to continue to develop that area. So, but yeah.
I guess my question is, are the areas in between, I mean, are we kind of jumping over areas of annexation? And that doesn't really matter much. We do that all over the state. But what I wonder is, are these areas included in a boundary declaration area for those communities?
No, I understand. I pulled that map back up so you can see where there is that separation. We do have some residential, which is actually has been in unincorporated Iron County as well for residential. So we did skip over those, but we picked back up where the industrial zoning was already in place.
I'll talk to you later about this.
Okay, I may be misunderstanding.
No, you're fine. You've got the right answer, the answer I'm looking for, but I need to just chat with you for a minute or two on a couple of these projects, okay?
Certainly. Thanks. Thank you. Anything else about Iron Springs Amendment 2? If not, then we'll move on to the Central Utah Agri-Park. So this item is the second presentation of the Amendment 2 for the Central Utah Agri-Park project area in Juab County. This amendment includes the addition of about 2,300 acres into the project area. This is property that's located just north of Nephi City. This amendment the necessity for this amendment stems from the R6 Regional Council's AgriPark Board of Directors acquisition of approximately 920 acres from CITLA. After an extensive two-year search, this property was selected as the optimal location for the AgriPark, which is central to the project area's creation. The amendment also includes 1,400 adjacent acres of private land for the potential development of public utilities and supporting businesses in the area. With the expectation that this area will be annexed into Nephi City eventually. This amendment aligns with Project Area Plan and Budget, whose main objective is to create a better future for Utah's family farms, economy, and food security. Although the preliminary phases are supported by the R6 Regional Council, the AgriPark will ultimately benefit farmers and Utahns across the entire state. To avoid confusion, this property will be named the AgriPark Zone. The property that's currently recognized as the AgriPark Zone, which is south of Nephi, between Nephi and Levan, that will name of that will be changed to the Juab Valley Zone. So that for the properties that we're looking at with that amendment. Any questions about the Central Utah AgriPark Amendment 2?
I have no questions up here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Stephanie, back, you are next. If you could pull those mics in a little closer to you, this
sure just, thing. Yeah, we'll speak into them.
In this room sometimes, and they're hard to hear from. Thank you.
Thank you, Board. I'm pleased to present on the Second Amendment for the Golden Spike Project area. I wanted to start by introducing some guests that we have here. In attendance with us, we have the Willard City Mayor, Travis Moat, who is with me on the stand. Also in attendance, we have Jeremy Kempton, the Willard City Manager, Madison Brown, the City Planner, as well as two members of the City Council, Rod Mund and Jacob Bodley. And so we're very grateful for their attendance today and look forward to discussing the Second Amendment of the Golden Spike Project area, which will be including about 178 acres into the project area. This is a unique area since it's going to be strategically located between the Box Elder County and Weber County labor sheds and is situated right in between I-15 and the UP main line. This is a really exciting area for development, and there's already a lot of projects that are currently taking a look at this specific piece of land. And so we've been really thankful to collaborate with Willard City on this project. And I would like to turn a little bit of time over to Mayor Moat to talk about what this means for Willard City.
Yes. Thank you for your time. Willard City is kind of a small bedroom community smashed in kind of between the mountains and Willard Bay. And really not a lot of economic infrastructure and diversity in town. And it's been an initiative of the City Council and myself and the community to help drive in more economic development. We're working on an economic development plan with the state and some other things. But this piece of property is prime, and we have it in our future land use for industrial and some retail type of infrastructure. And the Inland Port Authority, I think, is important to us to be able to develop that area and make it suitable for those land uses, particularly for the industrial piece, and then also supporting 600,000 visits to Willard Bay each year right there, and things. So this would be a huge benefit to us. And in the future, UTA has some ideas for maybe some transit stops and other things there. So thank you.
Thanks so much, Mayor. I also wanted to add that this amendment and future amendments will be including 3% of the differential to our wetland policy. And this helps support the protection of sensitive lands in the region. And we look forward to working with the city on potential projects that can be utilized for that wetland policy. We also appreciate the partnership of Millstream Partners. They are going to be integral to developing this area and have already been working really, really closely with the city to get this area entitled and ready to go. We wanted to turn the time over to the board for any questions on the Willard District and the Golden Spike Second Amendment.
Is there any questions from the board? I have none. You've explained it very well. Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you,
Mayor, for participating.
Stephanie, I believe you have one more presentation for us, Brigham City and Nucor.
That's correct. So I am here to discuss a tax sharing agreement that we are bringing to the board, and this is a pretty unique agreement, but I wanted to provide some historical context for the public and for the board. This is in relation to the Nucor Towers and Structures project that is coming to Brigham City. They are investing over $200 million into Brigham City over the life of the project, building out a 250,000 square foot steel manufacturing facility that will be building steel structures for power infrastructure. And they are going to be creating 263 jobs in the area. So the board this last January approved of a 30% incentive for Nucor Tower and Structures. And that incentive will be 30% of the property tax generated in this area. And on the map, you'll see it's that dotted area in the bottom right-hand corner. And we are going to be working with Brigham City and with Nucor on building out some needed infrastructure. And we're going to be using the remaining tax increment outside of that incentive to pay for the needed infrastructure. This is namely a power substation that's not only going to serve Nucor, but will help serve the industrial area right here. And the city is partnering with Nucor to build that infrastructure. The city is going to be bonding for the infrastructure costs, and the city is coming to UIPA for a tax sharing agreement to help cover that regional infrastructure cost. So this will be a unique three-way agreement between Brigham City, Nucor, and UIPA to ensure that that project gets completed in a timely manner, as well as get financed appropriately. And we anticipate that this improvement will be approximately $9 million. The exact cost of this improvement is going to be determined after the city completes a bid for the qualifying upgrades. And that figure will be incorporated into the final agreement between Brigham City, Nucor, and UIPA. And so we will be providing a percentage of the remaining tax differential up to the cost of the approved expenses. But wanted to give the board an idea of the approximate cost of the infrastructure as we know it today. The Tax Differential Committee unanimously recommended approving this agreement on October 29th, and we recommend the UIPA board to approve the tax sharing agreement for Brigham City and Nucor. Any questions from the board on this tax sharing agreement?
Any questions? I don't think any. I don't have any questions for you, but I attended this morning a doubling of a welding facilities at the Davis Technology Center. So it looks like you're creating an employment opportunity for those entering that and maybe those coming out very quickly. So,
well, let's keep those skilled workers here in Utah. Let's get them employed here.
Well, they can double the capacity there now. They have a great facility, and looks like you have open arms for them in Brigham City.
Absolutely. We'll put them to work.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair.
All right. Let's move on to the public hearing or public comment portion of the meeting. We've got a couple of comments here from people, and I would just remind you that we run a fairly tight time frame and a couple of minutes, if you could make your presentation that amount of time. Once your name is announced, we will give you a couple of minutes. And in order to support the respectful meeting terms that disrupt the meeting, will be put down rather quickly. And we'll try and conclude this in about 15 minutes. I do have a couple of, Ben, why don't you read those for us, if you will?
Yes, we have two postcards. So if you both want to come to the front, we have Joan Gregory and also Monica Hilding.
And Joan, if you'd like to go ahead and proceed, you're certainly welcome.
Hi, can you hear me? Okay. Hi, I'm Joan Gregory from Salt Lake City. I'm talking about Iron County. Iron County's water resources are insufficient to meet plans for current and future growth, and state-subsidized development from UEPA is making that situation worse by incentivizing and fast-tracking growth. Iron County has drawn down its groundwater resources such that catastrophic subsidence has occurred, causing compression of the aquifer to the point where it is unable to recharge. The subsidence has impacted public infrastructure and homes. As a result, state officials found that water resources in the area were overallocated. Central Iron County communities currently pump around 7,000 acre feet more each year than the aquifer can sustainably recharge. The dropping aquifer has caused wells to run dry, the ground surface to sink, resulting in damage to roads, homes, and other structures. And Iron County is currently in a water war with other localities in an attempt to pipe 15,000 acre feet from the Pine Valley in Beaver County to Cedar City in Iron County. Into this dire situation comes state subsidies to incentivize and fast-track development in Iron County. During a presentation at the 2025 Utah legislature, where he requested $4.8 million to fund water resource infrastructure, the director of the Central Iron County Water Conservancy District specifically mentioned local inland port development as a reason it was needed. Then on October 14th, he asked for $11.5 million in general appropriation funds for the same project. The bottom line is that Utah taxpayer dollars should not be used to incentivize and fast-track development in an area that does not have the water resources to support that development. Thank you.
Joan. Let's go to Monica.
Can you hear me? As I remarked at your last meeting, your publicity team is doing a great job. Your wetlands commitment to preserving Utah's wetlands, especially around the Great Salt Lake, appears to support Utah's efforts to be the first in the world to save an inland saline lake. Your wetlands policy focuses on prioritizing conservation of ecosystems vital to wildlife and migratory birds. This is essential to saving the Great Salt Lake because once a wetland is destroyed, it is next to impossible to bring it back. Your sustainability engineer, Mona Smith, following your commitment to sustainable development, promises to minimize environmental impact by integrating eco-friendly practices and protecting water quality in project areas, implementing efficient water use strategies to support wetland sustainability, especially in water-scarce areas, as it is essential water management in our dry state. Your remediation work on the old Salt Lake landfill will reduce leachate by using wave evaporation system, wind-aided intensified evaporation. This system is explained in detail on page 45 of the Phase 1 Area Remedial Action Plan presented to the Utah State Department of Environmental Quality in July of 2022. UEPA markets this in the recent sustainability spotlight, revolutionizing leachate treatment with sustainable evaporation technology. This is a perfect example of UEPA marketing revolutionary as being an example of how UEPA is transforming the way that we treat that water is managed and treated. And so I just also wanted to say that as I was coming in here, Joan said she was tired, and I said that's understandable as this has been going on for a very long time. And many of the players are still the same. I have a record of Danny Stewart meeting in 2019 with Derek Miller and local businesses to talk about the Iron Springs. So this has been going on for a long time. And while you people are paid, we are volunteers and we're doing all this research on our own. And I hope you appreciate that.
Thank you very much. You keep us on our toes. We appreciate that. Do we have any online? We have no online public comments, so we'll close the public comment and move to the portion of the meeting where we will do our business as far as the approval of, we'll start with the approval of the policy. So.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'll just rehearse the motion. The motion would be to approve policy P-04, project area and property tax differential, as it has been presented by Chief Compliance Officer Amy Brown-Coffin.
I have a motion, and do I have a second? We online.
Representative Clancy.
We have a Representative Clancy online seconds that motion.
I'll second that.
Yeah, is there any discussion? If none, we will vote. Those in favor of the motion say aye.
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 Representative Clancy, did you vote? Sorry.
Aye, sorry.
Okay. All right, thank you. Let's go now to the next policy approval we need to consider. Ben?
Yep. The motion is the Utah Inland Port Authority Board moves to award Progress Energy Storage LLC an annual property tax differential rebate equivalent to 20% of the assessed property tax post completion of the development. This rebate will be provided yearly for no more than 25 years, provided continued operation within the project area during that time.
Prior to the motion, well, let's go ahead and vote on this, and I'll make a comment.
I'll make a motion. To approve.
I have a motion for approval. Do I have a second?
Representative Clancy.
I'll second that.
Representative Clancy is in Washington, D.C., and we all know everything is moving very slow there. So I have a motion second. Do I have, I will call for a vote. Those in favor of the motion say aye.
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 Thank you. Just a quick comment. You know, as we look at incentives, I've worked with them for a lot of years, and basically a 20% rebate on taxes is not different than if we were working with a redevelopment agency. There's a lot of different ways to move these through our system. And basically we're talking property that has zero, almost zero tax base right now. So when you have a zero tax base, to give back 20%, especially for an area that is not asking where we educate children, which doesn't happen in industrial areas very often, These are really net wins in what we do in the state of Utah. So they seem to make an awful lot of sense financially. Okay, Jim. Our next motion.
Yes, this one is the Utah Inland Port Authority approves resolution 2025-46, a resolution of the Utah Inland Port Authority Board adopting amendments to the Iron Springs Inland Port Project Area Plan.
That is the motion. Do I have someone who would be willing to state that motion?
I'll make the motion.
And I have a motion to adopt or to approve. Do I have a second?
I'll second that.
And I have a second. We will vote if there's no comment. Those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Let's go on to the next, Ben. I think the central.
All right. The Utah Inland Port Authority Board approves resolution 2025-47, a resolution of the Utah Inland Port Authority Board adopting amendments to the Central Utah Agri Park Inland Port Project Area Plan.
I'll make that motion.
Okay, we have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
And a second. Any comment or discussion? Those in favor of the motion say aye.
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 Okay. That is unanimous. We'll move on to our next motion.
All right. The Utah Inland Port Authority Board approves resolution 2025-48, a resolution of the Utah Inland Port Authority Board adopting amendments to the Golden Spike Inland Port Project Area Plan.
Okay.
I'll make that motion.
And we have a motion on the adoption of the Golden Spike Project Area Plan. Those in favor of that, I need a second on it.
I'll second the Golden Spike Plan.
Thank you, and I have a second. Discussion? Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. And
one more.
I think we've got one more. I've got a page stuck together here. Okay, there we go. Ben, if you would read that to us, please.
Of course. Last but not least, Mr. Chair. The Utah Inland Port Authority Board approves resolution number 2025-49, Brigham City and Nucor Towers and Structures, Inc. participation agreement.
We have a motion.
I'll make that motion.
And do we have a second?
I'll second.
A motion and second to approve. Those in favor, say aye.
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 Thank you. Just to comment, the project in Brigham City with Nucor, that motion passes, by the way. The project in Nucor has been an amazing partner for the state of Utah for a long time. And to see them prosper here is really it's good for Utah. So thank you, Nucor and Brigham City. I don't think it's come together without them. Okay. With that. That would bring us to a point of adjourning our board meeting. And if I would like, a motion to adjourn. I have a motion to adjourn. I don't believe that lacks a second or commands any debates. So those in favor of adjournment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you for attending today. And these meetings, we do really better when we get everyone here, but my life is difficult. We have some very, very good people on this board, and they function very well, but they're very busy. Thank you very much for coming.
Okay.